So I'll be reading today from Uncommon Wisdom, The Life and Teachings of Ajahn Panyavadho. I'll be reading the chapter entitled Feeling. Craving is the root cause of attachment. Because of that, to free your mind from attachment, you must go directly to tanha, or craving, to eliminate that. If you overcome craving, you'll overcome attachments. But you cannot deal with the attachments directly. Trying to overcome attachments by sheer determination or willpower won't work. The only way to overcome attachments is to get rid of their cause, which is craving. This is stated clearly in Paticcasamuppada, or dependent origination. Dependent on feeling, craving arises. Dependent on craving, attachment arises. Craving being the condition for attachment, when craving is destroyed, attachment cannot arise. Because craving is dependent on feeling, when you aim to destroy craving, you have to first focus your attention on feeling. This is a critical point, because exactly at the juncture between feeling and craving, you can place a barrier. Feeling is just feeling. It is a result of past kamma, whereas the tanha is new kamma. So by allowing the two to link up, you are creating more kamma. If you can turn away at that juncture and prevent the new kamma from occurring, the situation gradually improves. But Paticcasamuppada does not give practical guidance on how to do that. It reveals how the process unfolds, but it does not indicate the way to unravel the entanglement. In order to unravel it, you must learn to find the feeling, examine the feeling, and see how it gives rise to tanha. Paticcasamuppada is an account of the sequence of causes that condition the arising of suffering and, in reverse order, the cessation of suffering. The Buddha's purpose in teaching dependent origination was to point out the general pattern of conditions that causes beings to wander endlessly in samsara, and how to show how that causal sequence can be brought to an end. The Buddha emphasized that he was able to attain enlightenment because he was able to bring dependent origination to an end within his own mind. Because Paticcasamuppada is a realization that the Buddha came to on the night he gained enlightenment as a teaching, it can be difficult to clearly comprehend. For that reason, the conditional factors of Paticcasamuppada should be used as meditation subjects with considerable caution. The Buddha laid out a practical teaching. For example, Paticcasamuppada explains the process of what happens to create dukkha, but it does not give the method of how to cure dukkha. In order to discover the method for curing dukkha, you must practice the Noble Eightfold Path until you understand the Four Noble Truths. That notwithstanding, a basic understanding of the process laid out by Paticcasamuppada can help quite a lot in meditation practice. It details a process that can be understood at different levels of subtlety. Due to these subtleties, the factors of Paticcasamuppada are difficult to interpret using conventional language. My understanding of them goes something like this. Avijja paccaya sankhara means avijja is the fundamental ignorance within oneself, a cloud of delusion which is extremely deep and all-pervasive. Ignorance produces the kamma that leads to all the conditions for birth. Dependent on the existence of those conditions, or sankharas, vijnana arises. Those first three factors, avijja, sankhara, and vijnana, are not dependent on physical human existence. They are most certainly mental states. The vijnana factor in Paticcasamuppada is always referred to as patisandhi vijnana. This is not the normal type of vijnana that we refer to as consciousness. Rather, it is the relinking consciousness that connects one birth to the next. That relinking consciousness forms the connection between past and future, which leads to grasping at the moment of conception. Patisandhi vijnana is said to be, quote, free of doors, that is, free of the sense doors. To understand Patisandhi vijnana, you should put aside the word consciousness, which can be quite a misleading translation. My understanding of the word vijnana in this context is that the prefix vi, meaning divided, is combined with jnana, meaning knowing. In other words, divided knowing. The mind splits into two, subject and object. And instead of being pure, unlimited knowing, the mind is driven by avidya plus kamma to discriminate so that it becomes this, knowing that. A duality is thus established in which the this becomes nama and the that becomes rupa. Thus, vijnana is the condition for the arising of nama rupa. Although avidya, sankhara, and vijnana are conditioning factors, those factors all arise simultaneous to the split into duality. No time interval is involved. It's like a railway engine pulling a train. The engine is the cause, but none of the cars move independently. So vijnana is a condition for nama rupa to arise. Nama rupa is a difficult factor to interpret. Nama literally means name. In other words, putting names to things, designating and defining. And rupa is the form, that is, the thing that we make concrete with the name. When we make forms concrete with names, we divide them out from the whole. Looking at the forest, we see leaves, trees, and flowers. We call them leaves, trees, and flowers merely to define certain aspects of what we see. But they are only our aspects. They do not exist as such there in the forest. The forest itself is one whole. It is we who differentiate the various aspects. In reality, our perceptions do not exist as separate entities at all. We separate the forest into various parts so that we can bring some order to our perceptions. This is how nama rupa works. It is the dividing out of certain aspects of our perceptions of nature which accord with the previous sankharas. In other words, we are defining our world according to our own past tendencies. So we create a world in the present based on data from the past. This loops back to avidya, paccaya, sankhara, with sankhara being the karmic conditions from the past that determine birth. Nama-rupa, in turn, conditions salayatana, which is the breaking forth of the sense fields. Senses are the fields of sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch, with the mind as the final, as the field of cognition. It is not so much that the senses are faculties we acquire, but rather that the senses are productive faculties. The sense fields produce sights, sounds, smells, tastes, and tactile sensations as internal phenomena, which means they are very actively involved in generating those sensations. In Paticcasamuppada formula, salayatana conditions passa, or sense contact. The sense fields allow contact between sense objects and their corresponding sense bases. So the sense bases are a precondition for contact to occur between the mind and its perceptions. Passa gives rise to vedana, that is, the sense contact conditions the arising of feeling. In the context of paticcasamuppada, the arising of feeling is a resultant process that is caused by consequences of actions done in the past coming up in the present. The feeling may be pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Feeling is a condition for tanha, or craving, to arise. Based on feeling, a personal, emotional judgment is made as to whether a feeling is considered pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, which leads directly to a craving for the pleasant, an aversion for the unpleasant, and a dull indifference towards the neutral. In other words, there is a tendency to react with either greed, aversion, or delusion. These reactions are all aspects of the kilesas. With feeling as their condition. Feeling arises, and then the kilesas arise. For example, you hear a sound you don't like. Based on that sensation, an unpleasant feeling arises. That unpleasant feeling is a feeling of aversion. Thus, aversion arises dependent on circumstances. Feeling is experienced first, and if we don't like it, that feeling then brings up aversion. Because that feeling is dukkha, a desire to suppress it arises. The tendency then is to search for scapegoats. You try to find something, like another person or a sound or the heat or whatever. You straightaway blame something like that for the unpleasant feeling. Then the anger goes out to that. This reaction is quite wrong because that anger generates a lot of thought, and that thought is kamma. That kamma will revert back to you later and produce the feeling again. But the feeling of aversion isn't the emotion of aversion. There's no aversion in feeling. It becomes aversion when you start thinking, criticizing, blaming, and so on. That's where the trouble comes, in the thinking. Feeling is a result of the past, but when you think, that thinking is kamma. So it's the thoughts that keep the anger going. It's there in paticca-samuppada. Dependent on passa, the contact of sensation, feeling arises. Dependent on the arising of feeling, craving arises. So the craving comes dependent on feeling, but the feeling is a result of the past. So it's just something you have to put up with. Whereas thought is tanha, the craving to get rid of that unpleasant feeling, which is the making of new kamma. Tanha has two aspects, craving to have pleasant feelings and craving to not to have unpleasant feelings. Craving in turn gives rise to either attachment to pleasant experiences or distaste for unpleasant ones, which is the reverse side of attachment. Because of habitual emotional patterns, we usually get caught by feeling when it arises, and immediately up comes tanha, or the craving. The only way to overcome that is to learn the method of going inward to investigate feeling. Suppose in the past you have been angry, and that anger triggers the arising of feeling in the present. That feeling is a feeling of imbalance. Your mind is out of balance. Feeling out of balance, you try to restore a sense of equilibrium within. If the cause is anger, the habitual response is to blame something or someone. If the cause is greed, the response is to go out searching for sense gratification. These are the normal ways that kilesas seek balance. Instead of restoring equilibrium, the kilesas become the causes of more defiled actions. When those actions bring results, the consequences of those actions then act as fertile ground for more defilements. In other words, seeking balance in defiled actions creates more kamma, which only makes the imbalance worse, because the consequences rebound back to you later on. In this way, the round of rebirths continues to revolve without end. As long as ignorance and defilements are calling the shots, kamma will continue to bring results and suffering will continue to accumulate. Only when ignorance and craving are destroyed will the chain of dependent origination be broken and the end of suffering be reached. To summarize in reverse order, attachment depends on craving. Craving depends on feeling. Feeling depends on sense contact. Sense contact depends on having the sense bases, which in turn depends on having mind and body. Mind and body depend on jnana, consciousness without doors, which arises due to the ignorance that produced the kamma, leading to all the conditions for birth, aging, sickness, and death. The point where we can have the greatest impact in breaking the cycle of birth and death is at the nexus between feeling, craving, and attachment. It is there that we can start unraveling paticca-samuppada. Feeling is a critical link in the chain of dependent origination because it is between feeling and craving that you can erect a barrier to prevent the evolution of the process. It's at this juncture between feeling and craving that we have an option to either accept or reject the kilesas. Craving's reaction to the arising of feeling is not predetermined. The arising of feeling simply means that the conditions are present for activating the kilesas. Whether the kilesas spring into action at that point or not depends on our state of mind. The kilesas don't have to become active. We have the option of accepting or rejecting them. That's where our freedom of will comes in. It comes in at the juncture where feeling conditions craving. When we do that, we start to dismantle paticca-samuppada until we reach the cessation of suffering. So let's examine feeling. Feeling is a result of past kamma. Feeling is based upon something that we've seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, or thought in the past. If we examine it, we'll see that the feeling is just based on a form, or a sound, or a smell, or a taste, or a contact, or a thought. That's all. But, because of memory, we then associate that sensation with some past experience. If the experience was pleasant, we like it. If unpleasant, we don't. And because we associate it with something in memory, a reaction takes place. We want it if it's pleasant. We don't want it if it's unpleasant. So when some object is presented to us through any of the senses, which we either like or dislike, we should try to notice the accompanying feeling, the feeling of attraction or repulsion, and how the tendency is to react with either greed or aversion. It is the reaction that's important. The feeling arises down in the heart region, and the reaction arises down there too. But the reaction is often supported by a lot of thinking, which is up in the head. Feelings are results of karma from the past, which is felt as pleasant or unpleasant, good or bad. When pleasant karma comes up, it brings a feeling of, I want that, which is triggered by greed. When aversion comes up, it triggers a response of, I don't want this feeling, I want to reject it. In trying to reject the feeling, we may think, oh, it was that person's fault, he did it, he caused this unpleasantness. So we make excuses and think critical, angry thoughts. Those angry thoughts are the reaction to the feeling. When angry thoughts come up, they are a form of present karma that tends to bring up the same feeling in the future when something triggers it. So when watching feeling, it is important to pay close attention to the reaction that feeling brings about when something sets it off. That's where we can easily go astray. For example, feeling may be set up through the senses. We hear a sound or we see or smell something, and that will bring up a memory from the past. That past situation comes up in the present as a feeling similar to the one in the past. We then react to that in the same way we did then, thus making the same type of karma which set up the feeling originally, so the wheel goes rolling on, round and round. Usually, the contact and the feeling arise so quickly that we have great difficulty in distinguishing them. Contact giving rise to feeling takes place so fast that it is almost impossible to separate them, so it's difficult to see that distinction. But feeling is the important factor to look at. We know that feeling comes from contact. Normally, the contact is automatic. It takes place without any deliberation. Following that contact, feeling arises. It's a resultant process that is caused by consequences of actions done in the past coming up in the present. When that happens, mindfulness should be focused on watching the feeling to make sure that a negative reaction does not take place. In other words, when it's an unpleasant feeling, we tell ourselves, this unpleasantness is my own fault. It's a result of my own karma. I've got to put up with it. We must always avoid blaming someone else. The feeling of aversion is an unpleasant feeling. We must learn to turn inwards and look at that feeling. If we can turn inwards and look at it, we won't let it escape and turn into bad thoughts. So we defeat the kilesas at that point. Mind you, we only defeat them a little bit at a time. To get rid of aversion completely, we'll probably have to do it many times until it gradually goes. To accomplish that, we must look within ourselves to find out where these feelings are. And we must discover what sort of feelings give rise to what sort of mental states. It is very important in meditation practice to look for feeling, to get to know it, particularly feeling in the solar plexus region. Because when we're upset, in one way or another, it's always felt down there. It's always there that the kilesas, the defilements, originate. Thoughts, speech, or actions that follow the lead of the defilements create karma. The karma that results will come back to us as feeling in the future, starting the cycle rolling again. When we short-circuit the whole process at the link between feeling and craving, the momentum will slowly lessen, and the offending defilements will gradually die away, bit by bit. The benefits won't appear suddenly. Old habits don't die easily, but with persistence, over time, they can be reformed. What's important is developing the good habit of being mindful of feelings as they arise and assessing their potential danger to us. It's almost like seeing a red flag come up, warning us to be vigilant. We immediately turn inward then, thinking, I mustn't let this get out of hand. This is a fundamental part of the training in sense restraint. So the way to deal with feelings is not so much a matter of deliberately not reacting to them, but rather one of being mindful of them. When we are mindful, not reacting will take place automatically. Mindfulness is a kind of monitor that checks what's going on without interfering with it. With mindfulness, we sometimes feel like we are standing back and watching the feelings, as though from a back seat inside somewhere. Observing from that back seat, we can see clearly what's happening, but we don't interfere in any way. Pleasant and painful feelings are just happening, and that's all. It's that sort of attention that is required. So pay close attention to feelings. When unpleasant feelings arise, examine them at the point where they occur. Don't let those feelings turn into thoughts about blaming others. Think only about the feeling, not other people. In other words, if you keep the mind inside, no harm is done. Trouble comes only when you let it escape into thought, speech, or action. By allowing the mind to go out and blame things externally, you make kamma, and that kamma comes back to you in the future in the form of the same sort of feeling. So the wheel just keeps spinning. If you don't learn to correct this recurring cycle, you will never get free from it. To correct it, you must do the right thing by not letting the mind go out. You must focus inward every time to look at those unpleasant feelings and accept them. Accept that this is your own fault. Because you have done unwholesome acts, unpleasant feelings arise as a result. So you are to blame for the result. When you accept that it's your fault and don't let your attention go outward, then that debt is paid and your difficulties become a bit less. Each time you do it, they are reduced. Through that, you find a certain joy and contentment arising within. You feel happy. That happiness is a result of the work you've done, because you have learnt how to cure the defilements to some extent. The more you go on in this way, the more you feel buoyant and light. This result points out the right direction. It shows that you are taking the correct path. The more you experience happiness, the more you know that you're headed in the right direction. Kilesas come up because of feeling. Feeling is the goad which arouses them. So if you can put a barrier between the feeling and the craving, you stop the kilesas and they can't become active. By being aware of the kilesas, you can see them when they come up and not react to them. Because they come up in connection with certain feelings, you know that particular feelings are the conditions for the arising of particular kilesas. When that feeling comes up, you know that certain kilesas are lurking in the background. So keep a watch out. Keep the mindfulness strong. If you watch that process, the kilesas don't get a foothold, and the mind naturally calms down and becomes peaceful.
Questions, comments?
Comment would be, especially there at the end, when he was talking about non-judgmental mindfulness. I think that was reflecting this, how much of that also can be tied into the realm of the hearts. Like mindfulness was more like equanimity.
Yeah, I think that that sense of having that quality of well-wishing and compassion are kind of the same. I mean, one is, of course, it's one's turning the attention to the causal process and not sort of blaming or feeling put upon by external things. But similarly, there's a not getting caught up in the self-blaming and the lack of well-wishing and compassion that can sometimes come directed towards oneself. There I go again. There I've been following my feelings and getting caught up in them. You know, we can prop up that whole story as well. And and it's important to curb the externalizing, but it's important to not sort of demonize the internal as well, and be able to step back and see things in terms of cause and condition. And cause and condition not just in a mechanical, cold sense, but a cause and condition in the sense of, oh, this is the way out. This is a real opportunity for really handling this in a real skillful way.
Yeah, I've heard Ajahn Amaro directly relate exactly what you're talking about, Ajahn Jyotipala, with like Brahmaviharas and Metta specifically, he sort of glosses a radical acceptance. And he really, he talks of, it was very helpful for me, talking about like reacting to pain with spaciousness.
Right.
And sort of holding the space around the unpleasant sensations, and as that being a manifestation of Metta. And, you know, that's exactly what I think Upa Panya is talking about here.
It's also worth noting that anger is said to be the easiest of the defilements to uproot.
Right.
So he focuses this whole section on disconnecting feeling and craving on the easiest one to break. And I, that's probably no accident.
Right.
He also
gets his confidence and encouragement. Okay, this is doable. To base
love. He also gave the, I think this is a lot of this was at Wat Nanachan. Where he gave these to mostly Westerners.
Right.
Probably mostly suffering from anger.
A year ago, you gave a talk about the same topic on, you were referring to Lumbar Liam. Didn't you have a slightly different take?
It was more like cutting it between craving and clinging. But that's Sadhu Buddhadasa, actually.
Buddhadasa.
But I thought Lumbar Panya was touching on that a little bit, in that he was combining feeling, craving, and clinging, although he called it clinging attachment in this one. He was speaking of all three.
One more question.
Yeah.
Ajahn Panyabhata was talking about keeping it inside and looking at the feeling as opposed to acting on the feeling and going out. And I know I grew up with this idea of suppression and repression of your feelings being very bad.
Right.
And you, like, it could cause illness, and the thing to do is to speak your mind, express yourself, and that's obviously quite different. And sort of living in community, it seems to be a combination of like sorting things out with people externally, but obviously the main part is sorting it out internally.
Right.
And I was wondering if you'd be willing to speak on, yeah, that balance, or finding that balance. Of,
well, I think one of the things is it ties back into loving kindness and compassion, in the sense that when we, you know, we experience something, and then just to immediately react out of aversion, irritation, a particular view or opinion, without investigating it and transforming it, then it complicates one's own suffering and the suffering of others, the effect that it has. But having internalized it, reflected on it, transformed it to a certain degree, then one can, and still feel that one needs to act on it, then, but at least it's tempered with discernment and certain loving kindness and compassion. And that has a real positive effect, because some things do need to be addressed. But say when it's when there's no filter, especially when there's no filter of discernment, then it gets really messy. But when there is that filter of reflection and compassion, then it has a beneficial effect for oneself as well as for others that one is engaging with. Because then it's a stepping off point for actual learning. Whereas oftentimes the and the kind of immediate reactivity is not really a good basis for learning. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I've also found that my avoidance strategies can manifest internally as well as externally.
What was that?
My avoidance strategies can be both external and internal.
Right.
So I can try to avoid an unpleasant feeling by reacting and blaming and going outwards.
Right.
But I can also switch meditation subjects. I can start daydreaming. The repression mechanism can also happen when you quote go inwards.
Right. Yeah, that came up the other day, that spiritual bypass, where we put a spiritual label on something that we're doing out of ignorance and delusion.
I'm reading Ajahn Tirudhamo's book on hindrances right now. I think he's pointing out oftentimes if we're trying to suppress or get rid of a hindrance, we usually have to use a different hindrance to get rid of that one. Whereas if you just open up and look to it, then you're using wholesome qualities. Yeah, that was interesting.
Okay.